and swings, and he drives the ball into the air pretty deep out in right field to the bullpen wall. Verdugo leaps, and it's gone! It's gone! They pitch to Teoscar Hernandez, and Hernandez makes them pay. A three-run 10th inning shot, and the Blue Jays have a 5-2 lead.
That was Ben Wagner with the call last night as the Toronto Blue Jays opened a five-game series, a rare five-game series with the Boston Red Sox, beating them in 10 innings. Jeff Blair and Kevin Barker, this is Baseball Central for a Friday. A reminder, we will have Blue Jays baseball at 4 o'clock, the first pitch of two games, a doubleheader, two seven-inning games. And a writer's block will be from 3 to 4 today, so we'll get you set. Dave Steeb will be a very special guest, our very special guest, I should say, on writer's block. And, of course, it was when it was August, was it August 4th that he threw his perfect game? September 4th? I'm trying to figure out the date. Threw his perfect game for the Toronto Blue Jays. So Dave Steeb will join us during writer's block. Mr. Barker, a little bit of what we've seen from the Blue Jays again last night. Base running mistakes. We did see some home run. We saw some power. We saw some really good pitching from Taijuan Walker. And, you know, again, I keep thinking of Charlie Montoya's comments yesterday about how it'd be nice to have a breather, an easy game now and then. But Kev, I just think the way these guys play, we're just going to have to get used to this. We already have, and with all those games coming up against the Yankees, we may just have to get used to this.
Yeah, well, I think their lineup's not real conducive to getting them on, getting them over, getting them in, stringing together three or four hits in a row. They're going to have the the bloop and the blast, and it's very hard to them to consistently get that to score six or seven or eight runs. These games are going to be 3-2, 4-2, 5-3. Last night they broke out in the 10th inning hitting the home run. Teoscar Hernandez, he's becoming something that, some thought he could be. I think there's more in the tank. He could become a better two-strike hitter. He can hit lefties better. The lefties right now, he's got an OPS of a little over 1,100. I think there's a little bit more in the tank. You can go up and start to see him hunting better pitches. He's together with his upper half to his lower half. That all that movement he had last year, it's very hard to time all that up. I talk about that with the other guys all the time, about all the movement to get it down on time, get the hands through the hitting zone. He's doing that better than most right now. He's doing it with a lot of confidence. That's how they're scoring runs. When you have this kind of pitching who keeps you in the game, allows you to sooner or later have a bloop and a blast, that's how they're winning, right? They have 24 more games left. You do that 10 or 11 more games out of that, and you win those games, you're in the playoffs.
Yeah, I think I mentioned, by the way, it was a no-hitter Steve pitched on September 2nd, 1990, hence the reason we're having him on writer's block.
Very
did you
cool.
Make a Taijuan Walker yesterday?
I think he's great. What is he? He's got a 1.54 ERA. He's allowed two earned runs over 11 and two-thirds in two starts as a Blue Jay. What more do you want? He attacks the strike zone. He has a mound presence like we haven't seen in a while. He's a big presence out there. He talks to himself. That gives a little fear in a hitter's mind. You always might not want to dig in against him. His stuff, it's not off the charts great, but he does attack the strike zone. He gave up a home run last night to Jackie Bradley Jr. on a bad spinner. What's he do? He comes right back and attacks his own with fastballs. That's what a veteran guy does. You erase what just happened. You attack the next guy. He's exactly what the doctor ordered. He's what they needed to complement Ryu. And, you'll take that 1-2 punch if they do make it in the playoffs.
You know what I find really interesting, thinking back to comments Ross Atkins made around the acquisition of Taijuan Walker? And I think maybe it's the way to look at it, the way to look at the acquisition here. He talked about making moves that would stabilize the starting rotation. I think more than anything else, that's what these moves have done, especially Taijuan Walker. Just kind of given a sense of order to the rotation, and by extension, that has trickled down into the bullpen. So that's the way I look at Taiwan Walker and maybe to a certain degree Ross Stripling. We'll see what he brings today. But the idea that they will stabilize that starting rotation, and that's something that the Jays really didn't have last year, and they didn't have at the start of the year. It does. If you can't have four or five lights out starting pitchers, the next best thing is to have four or five guys who are probably aren't going to surprise you. You know what you're going to get from them, and at least when you know what you're going to get from a guy, it allows you to plan for how the game's going to go.
Yeah, I think you need two consistent guys, and then you can fill in the blanks in the other spots, especially when you have a bullpen that the Blue Jays have. You know, they have depth there. They have power arms they can go to. They have swing and miss arms out of the bullpen. You add a Ryu, you add a Walker. Those guys can give you quality innings. You know, it's not always about giving you innings. You have to give quality innings. And having a Taiwan Walker come in with the confidence he has, being the team guy that he is, you know, it just makes it easier for everybody else to go out and do their job. It takes a little bit of pressure off them. I don't think I'd watched him enough to actually benefit and think that he, you know, has this good of stuff. He attacks the strikes on the way he does with the fastball, just making a little mechanical change of simplifying it, you know, repeating it over and over again, which is what he's done. You know, he can stay over the rubber a little bit better. He can get it out of the glove quick enough. He can get the landing foot lands in the same spot all the time. I know this sounds repetitive and it sounds simple, but it is when you've been in the big leagues as long as these guys have, it is just as simple enough as if I can repeat something over and over again, I know I can throw a ball where I want to throw it. I'm going to get consistent outs. I'm going to help my team win. And that's what these two guys are doing at the top of the rotation.
The home run that Teoscar Hernandez hit last night, his 10th home run, ties him for the major league lead. Another home run to
13th
the
home run.
Sorry, what did I say? 10th.
13th. 10th.
What explains this opposite field power?
That's a gift. He's born with that. I've told you that since we watched him in batting practice that first time we saw him, and you see him going right center in the third deck at the Rogers Center. And I told you, nobody's ever seen power like that. That's that power that doesn't come around like that every day. You see, that's why he mashes when he goes to Boston. Is, you know, a lot of people go to that Green Monster who are right-handed and want to pull the ball, change their approach, look for something secondary pitches so they can get out in front and bang it off that wall. He doesn't. He stays with the same approach because there's not too many people that can miss hit a changeup and hit it out to right field. And being a right-handed hitter at Fenway Park, it's just the way the wind blows there, the way the ball doesn't carry to right field, and doing that as a right-handed hitter. You know, can he continue to do this? Who knows? But it's just the fact of he simplified everything. He's making it as quiet as possible. You know, he has a two-strike approach, because he has quick enough hands. He has a strong enough upper body that he can just get the foot down early enough, not so much drive down and through it, but get the barrel in the hitting zone. Dante Bichette, get it in the zone quick as you can. Keep it in the zone as long as you can and let the ball travel. That's what he's doing right now. It's going to be sky's the limit. What is the end result for him? Can he hit 300 and hit 30 homers and drive in 100 runs? If he continues to do this, why not? Because he can use the whole field. He's absolutely annihilating fastballs, which is what you have to do. Now it's just taking it to that next level, you know, ambushing a curveball, hitting a lefty a little bit better earlier in counts, being a better run producer. Guys on second base, what do? I don't change my approach. That guy's on the ropes. So you're starting to see him make it and turn the corner, and middle of the order bad. All of a sudden, the Blue Jays have found that guy.
Yeah, and the Blue Jays have also found themselves tied with the New York Yankees.
Yeah, about that.
As we all predicted.
Just like you did.
Stop it. Who's in first place?
Yeah.
Who's in first place? Just
I don't
say
know.
It.
Yeah. I haven't looked.
All right. I just want to make sure. Just want to make sure.
Yes.
And nobody's laughing anymore at the Rays potential World Series call that I made. I noticed you aren't. It's funny. You haven't brought that up for a while.
Again, I say it. Sooner or later, they're gonna win a World Series. You picked them every year that I've known you. That you picked teams to win the World Series. Sooner or later, they're gonna win one.
Let's bring in Jeff Passan of ESPN. Hello, Mr. Passan.
Hello, gentlemen. How are you?
We're doing well. We're as expected, enjoying seeing the Blue Jays and the New York Yankees going at it. we all predicted this. What's up with the Yankees?
I just noticed this earlier today. I don't know what the tiebreaker is exactly, but right now, if the AL playoffs were to start today, I think it would be the Rays and the Yankees in the first round.
How about that? Yeah.
How about that? Yeah, I don't know what the, that's a good question. I don't know what the tiebreaker is, because can't be common record if you're tied with somebody you haven't played. I don't know. That's interesting.
I would assume in division, the Yankees and the Blue Jays are actually tied exactly right now. So,
yeah, that there you go. That would be a good way to look at it. Well, the Yankees, obviously, they have a ton of injuries. I think we've had a chance to talk to you since the trade deadline. I just got the sense that Brian Cashman's approach is just kind of, let me get everybody healthy again and we'll go into the playoffs. It's as simple as that.
That's what it seems like, and that's not an entirely unreasonable approach to take, considering the players who they're missing right now. But I look at the Yankees pitching staff and their starting pitching especially, and I compare and contrast that with the Rays and with the Indians and with some of the other teams around the American League, and it's like it just doesn't hold up. Gerrit Cole is still one of the best pitchers in the world, and I would, if I had to choose anybody to start a game right now, he would probably be among the top three, and that's great, but you're only getting one start of him in that wild card series, and you're going to get two out of them in a division series, but only if it goes to the end. After that, Masahiro Tanaka's been great in the postseason, and I trust him, but do I trust Jay Happ? Do I trust Jordan Montgomery? Is James Paxton going to be healthy? Are they going to use Michael King or Jonathan Loaisiga or Clark Schmidt? Like, what are they going to do exactly? Gabby Garcia? I mean, they have options. They have possibilities. Mm-hmm. And I think it's that depth that allowed Brian Cashman to say, I'm not going to go and overspend for a Lance Lynn. But, man, Lance Lynn would look really, really good in that rotation right now.
Yeah, I watched Gerrit Cole the other day throw. He looks like he's not throwing as hard. He's giving up more home runs. You think there's any worry whatsoever? I understand he's a great pitcher, and he'll probably figure it out. And this is an odd year. But he is not doing the things I just mentioned, and he's giving up some home runs. Do you think the Yankees are a little worried about that?
Sure. I can understand the concern, because anytime a guy's given up, 12 home runs and 46 innings the year after he gave up, what was it like? Yeah, I guess he didn't give up more home runs last year. He gave up 29 last year, but that's in 212 innings. I mean, the pace he's on right now is Blylevian. And it is not a good thing ever to give up home runs, but it is particularly bad, I think, this year when such a disproportionate number of runs are scored on the long ball.
Yeah, that I look at Gerrit Cole and the innings he pitched last year, and they were obviously high leverage innings when you go to the postseason. And then you come to a new situation and you've got spring training and it's interrupted and you start up again. This is one of the things I think that really Gerrit Cole, Jeff would probably be less of an example than somebody else. But how do you think teams are going to judge bad years this year? Like, if somebody has a year where you just go, man, I did not see that. Now, are they going to go, screwed up, short sample size? I don't know, 60 games, is that still a short sample size? Like, we're talking about Teoscar Hernandez. If you're the Blue Jays and Teoscar Hernandez finishes with 20 home runs, do you look at him and go sign him up to a 4-year contract? Like, how do you judge this year?
Two things. Number one, it's funny you said that, because I'm doing a story for next Wednesday that's going to hit on a bunch of things, but I have a list of extension question players, and Teoscar Hernandez is actually on that list. I think you have to definitely assign some reality to it, but it's got to go both ways. I'm glad you brought up the converse of that, because if you're giving grief to players who had poor years this year, then you got to give credit to guys who had good years. And I think whereas in a normal season, you would assign a higher confidence interval to the performance that a particular guy has, I just think this year it's going to be an acknowledgement that, yes, he was better or worse, but the notion that he's going to repeat that in a good way or a bad way, I don't have nearly as much confidence in, because the sample is relatively smaller.
Hmm. Yeah, now, around the industry, what are people saying about Vladimir Guerrero Jr.? Do they think he's going to be good in the long run? What's the talk been like?
I think there's certainly still hope that that's going to be the case. I mean, yeah. He still hits the ball hard. He still shows flashes of it. He's not having a bad year by any means. It's just when you contrast him to what Fernando Tatis Jr., a guy who came up at the same time, who came up with almost as much hype, is doing, where he's got a pretty reasonable shot this year to be the youngest, most valuable player in baseball history.
Yeah.
That's where the disappointment with Vladdy is. I think there is going to be the question put out there, and more loudly now after 2 years than it was when he came up, even though it was on people's mind, what would he do if he were in shape? Hmm. How much better could he be? And I wonder if that's something he's going to take upon himself this offseason to change. Is he going to show up? Is he going to be a best shape of your life guy next spring? It's hard to do during the season. Mm-hmm. But the fact that he's moved over to first base and already is spending his time at first base and as a DH, and he's 21 years old, maybe that's the ultimate place where he winds up. But I really do. I personally wonder if Vladdy were in better shape, how much better would he be as a hitter?
Jeff, we know that the latest round of COVID-19 results have come out. I believe there was one positive test. It was a support staff or a staff member. We seem to have, and I'm knocking on wood here, we seem to have gotten through that whole, the crisis with the Miami Marlins and then the Cincinnati Reds, the St. Louis Cardinals, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. A couple of questions for you. One, has there been any further move towards figuring out how and when they're going to announce whether or not we will have a bubble for the postseason, which seems to be a talking point? And also, is there any explanation you're hearing for, again, I'm knocking on wood when I say this, but how teams seem to have gotten this situation under control, at least to the point now where I don't think everybody's running around saying the season isn't likely to finish?
Yeah, and I think that's a pretty incredible thing for us to be saying. And,
oh, it is. I never thought I'd say it.
Yeah. I mean my percentages have gone up by the week, and they've gone up even more, guys, with the last three times that there were positive tests. Mm-hmm. First, I believe, was the Cincinnati Reds. After that, I believe, was the New York Mets, and this past week has been the Oakland A's. And what teams have been able to do is contain them. And they've been able to contain them, I think, in large part because the vast majority of people are following protocols. And even if you follow protocols, there is the chance that your family member, for example, is going to bring COVID-19 home from his or her workplace, from the grocery store, from wherever. As we know, you can catch it in all kinds of places. But the testing has worked, and the contact tracing has worked, and the isolation has worked, and they've been able to prevent the same types of outbreaks that the Cardinals and Marlins have. Now, does that mean they're going to be able to prevent them in the future? Who knows? I mean, we've seen how bad it can get, and to think that it can't get that bad again would be naive, frankly. But I think that there's a pretty high degree of confidence at this point that not only are they going to finish the season, but they're going to go to the postseason. And while a bubble is not done yet, I think that it's the sort of thing that's likely to be finalized in the coming week or two. And once that's done, everyone's going to be getting ready. I think, in fact, that probably teams, even at home, are going to be spending the last week of the season in hotels so they can start getting the virtual bubble going and not have to spend, you know, 3 or 4 days at the beginning of the postseason needing to do intake testing.
Okay, Jeff.
We do have some clarification here, our Lance Kennedy. This is the tie-breaking procedure. Of course, tiebreaker games will be eliminated. Ties will be broken by head-to-head record, followed by better record within a team's division and record in the last 20 games within the division. If there is still a tie, the standard would be last 21 games within a division, then 22, etc. Teams could finish the regular season with differing numbers of games played. There you go.
Whoa.
How much fun will that be?
I think the Jays are 13-10, and the Yankees are 11-8 right now. So that is a virtual tie. Mm-hmm. But the idea that that's going to continue to be tied and be tied and be tied, there will be a tiebreaker. Point is, Yankees and Rays would be a hell of a first round game.
It'd be a great first round,
and it would be. I'd really enjoy Jays and A's too. That's got a chance to be a pretty good one. And, the American League field is going to be really quite solid this year. It's not like the NL where right now I think you've got a sub-500 team sneaking in at the back end. The AL just has such clear lines of demarcation at this point. And listen, the Jays can't slack. The Tigers are sort of lurking there around 500 right now, but I think any reasonable person who looks up and down their rosters, who looks at the fact that the Jays have a run differential of 31 better than the Tigers, will say that Toronto is a superior team and probably should be the one that's in the playoffs.
Jeff, before we let you go, which one of the new rules that was put in this year do you think will stick next year?
I think expanded playoffs are not going away. I would be stunned to see the designated hitter in the National League go away. I think doubleheaders will probably continue to be 7 innings. I don't know about the runner on second. I think there's probably momentum to have the runner on second in extra innings, but I that's just one where I simply don't have a great feel for at this point.
Yeah, I kind of get the sense that there are people who sort of conceptually like it, but wonder if maybe you don't play the 10th inning under regular rules and then use it in the 11th. I've heard people talk about that. To me, that kind of defeats the purpose. If you're going to use it, go all in. If not, don't.
Yep.
But I wanted to hate it. I really wanted to hate it. I wanted to hate it so much, and I have to admit I like it.
I do, too. Yeah. I like it, too.
But
I'm not a fan. It's so hard to get on base. Why are we starting someone on second? I understand what it does. I understand why you like it. It creates action, and that's something that baseball needs. And I'm glad with the fact that we haven't gone to the first batter gets intentionally walked, next guy bunts him over, sack fly. That typically has not been the strategy. They've let guys swing away. So I like that. But I have trouble getting over the guy starting on second. Sorry, I'm an old man.
Well, you're not an old man, but there are. Listen, it will be a healthy discussion.
I'm turning 40 this month, Blair. Let me ask you a question. I I know you two are geezers, so that's fine. But would you agree that once you cross 40, you are in middle age? You are a middle-aged person.
No. No, because people are living longer. You got to be. You hit middle age at 51.
51?
51.
It's a very odd number, 51.
Not 51.
It's an odd number.
No, 51. You got to clear into the. You got to get into the next decade. Yeah, I mean, you got to like have one foot in the next decade.
I always thought it was when you started getting stuff like 30% off or half off because you turn a certain age.
No. No, no. 51 is the point of demarcation. 50 is your last year of being 51. You got a long way to go, my friend.
51.
You got a long way to go. Although in Donald Trump's America.
I think you need to ask the listeners here. I feel like, the average age of Americans, certainly not 80. I mean, you're more than halfway there, man.
But I mean, I got relatives. I got a mother who's 95. I have an uncle who died at 102. So I look at 55 as middle age.
You Blairs are hale and hearty. I'm very proud of you.
Yeah, no, I figure 51 is middle age.
Yeah.
But what I will say is,
life expectancy in America is 78.6 years, my friend.
I will say this though, it is odd because you become an old man at 60. So like your middle, you know, there's really
right,
no.
Right. So you have 9 years of middle age. No, that's pretty much.
And then you become an old man, because 60 is when you get all the discounts and stuff, right? 60 is when you get all the discounts. That's when you start going for dinner at like 4 p.m. in Florida. So
I love that Barker has created the threshold of old age is when you start receiving discounts.
That's it.
We'll let you go, Mr. Passan. Have a good weekend.
Have a good one.
I got to go and empty the drool bucket. Have a good weekend.
See you, geez.
Take care.
He's talking to you.
Soon
you
to be 40-year-old
right?
Jeff Passan. But you see what I mean, right? 51 no. is middle age.
That's a very odd number.
51 is middle age. Then 60-year-old.
Okay.
So Barker, you got a long time. Have you turned 40 yet? Seriously.
45. 45.
You're 45.
Yeah. I don't look it, do I?
No, you don't.
No.
You don't look. You don't look a day over. I wouldn't have thought 40, to be honest. But there you go. Oh. Wait a minute. Yes, I would have. I was at your 40th birthday.
Boy.
Anyhow, 590 is the text line. Among the many questions to be discussed is, are you with me that you don't get in the mid-age until you're 51 and then you become old at 60? So you've only got 9 years, effectively 9 years of middle-aged life. 590 is the text line. It's Baseball Central on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. The text line is open. It is 590 ahead of a doubleheader at 4 o'clock today, starting at 4 o'clock between the Jays and the Boston Red Sox. How am I looking at this? Writer's block will be on from 3 to 4 to get you set for the game. Dave Steeb joined us September 2nd, 1990 was when Dave Steeb pitched his no-hitter.
Ask Dave about the shifts. How good of a pitcher would he be if they had shifts?
Oh,
then?
Jesus.
See what he says.
He was a B. I mean, this is, you know what? The separation. Like, because we had this discussion with Jeff Passan, by the way, about when you go into middle age and when you don't. And a lot of people are weighing in, saying middle age starts at 40 and ends when you turn 60. Anyone who disagrees is already 40 and in denial. My favorite is Jacob from Georgetown. I think middle age is 45. You get to be stuck in your ways at 60, so that gives you 15 years to try to stay hip and cool.
That's not bad.
That's very good. And some of us, it doesn't work. But what I was going to say is the demarcation in age for Jays fans occurs when you ask them who the best pitcher in franchise history is.
Yeah.
anybody who's watched this team from the beginning to now would say Dave Steeb, and it's not even close. Anybody who started watching the Jays around 2010 or so would say Roy Halladay, and it's not even close.
Yeah, that's me. I played with Doc. I've seen it up close.
Yeah, I think it's a terrific discussion. I just think Dave Steeb is one of the most horribly underrated pitchers/players in the history of the game. He was so good. He was so dominant. But anyhow, he will join us on Writer's Block. 590-590 is a text line. We, as always, look forward to your texts, your rants, your questions, your suggestions. It's a terrific question here from Stephen Halifax. This is something I heard on the telecast, one of the telecasts this weekend, Kevin, and I stored it away, and I didn't, you know, because I'm old and the brain cells are deteriorating, it didn't come back to me again until I heard Buck and Pat, or Buck and Dan. Well, it is. Believe me, it's beating me right now. It's slapping me about the head. Until I heard Buck and Dan talk yesterday about it again, and it is true, the Jays have a difficult time with velocity. Now, I'm looking at this team. They're young. They hit home runs.
Yeah.
Why do they have difficulty hitting velocity, high velocity?
Yeah, I think it's because they don't look for it. That it's not because they can't. They
You're
going
to have to explain that
lickers.
To me. Why wouldn't you look for it? Because everybody throws hard.
I really do think because of the shift, because everybody's trying to get the ball in the air. You hit the ball on the ground. Most of the time you're out. I think it's easier to get the curveball, the breaking ball, the off-speed pitches in the air a little bit easier. And they tend to hang those a little bit more. You can locate the fastballs a little bit better. They can elevate it. It's very hard to get on top of a 95-mile-an-hour fastball. So why look for it? So the younger generation, like Vladimir Guerrero Jr., looks a lot with his lower half that he's not on time to hit the fastball and always on time to hit off-speed stuff. To me, that's backwards. I always thought it's like Teoscar Hernandez is having a monster, you know, half a year here because he is just annihilating fastballs. He's doing okay against off-speed pitches, but he is hitting fastballs everywhere super hard. That's, to me, the way you need to approach every at-bat. I'm on time to hit it. That means when they do throw me a breaking ball, I can see it longer. I have a better chance of laying off that strike-to-ball one. And then when they hang me one because I'm on time to hit the heater, I have a better chance of hitting that thing where I want to hit it, which is in the seats. It's just because they don't look for it enough.
Yeah, I find that I just find that fascinating because I just assumed that this team would mash fastballs. But I mean, you're right. We were talking about it off air a little bit when I read you the question that got my attention, and I was thinking to myself, all right, who is a real good fastball hitter in this team? And the two names we came up with were Teoscar and Bo. And yep. And Cavan can handle anything pretty much. Terry in Toronto, this is something we may have talked about a little earlier. He wants to know if we think Teoscar Hernandez is becoming Jose Bautista version 2. It's an interesting. First of all, remember that Jose Bautista was an infielder as well as an outfielder. So there was a positional change going on there. I will tell you this. I mean, Jose Bautista will tell you that when he started to turn the corner was when, oh, I've just drawn a brain cramp, who the hitting coach was when he turned the corner. He credited him. He was a friend of Cito. Somebody help me out, 590-590 on the text line. Oh, this is going to drive me nuts. But he credits whoever the hitting coach was then with helping the switch go on. Mm-hmm. And I wonder if maybe Dante Bichette might not be the guy for Teoscar. Guillermo Martinez is this organization's hitting coach. We know that. But it is interesting how many players talk about Dante having an impact on the team. People are guessing Gene Tennis and Larry Heisel. Folks, it's not those two. But people were talking about
about Dante Bichette having an impact. I wonder if that is the case here, maybe.
Okay, what is Jose Bautista? Home run hitter, run producer? What's the definition of Jose Bautista?
I just think he's a line drive hitter, is he not?
Jose Bautista? When he added the big leg kick, he got closer to the plate because of bat speed. That's to me where he took off. You watched him in Pittsburgh. He did none of that. Mm-hmm. He comes to Toronto, and then he's changing it. American League East, smaller ballparks, hit the ball in the air. You can make a lot of money that way. You can't make a living on the ground. It's the saying when you're a home
Bingo.
Run hitter.
Just got to interrupt you. Dwayne Murphy. Thank you, Andrew.
There you
Holland.
Go. There you go.
Dwayne Murphy was the guy he credited with helping it kind of all come together. Sorry, Bart, continue.
I think Teoscar can hit 290. Could Jose Bautista hit 290? Consistently? I think Teoscar could be a 290 hitter with 30-plus and drive in 80 to 100. I think he's that kind of guy. I think they really need to move him to center. That to me will make him a better hitter because he's not thinking about his defense. Sometimes he looks to me like he's dreading playing right field. I don't want him to do that. I want him to be excited to be on the baseball field. And to me, you put him in a familiar, happy place in center field where he can run all over the place, smile, wait on baseballs, and then go in and hit a bunch of homers. That's what I want him to do.
Yeah, and I always couch my criticism of Teoscar Hernandez's defense because of something I heard, and I've mentioned this in the show, and I always direct people to check out the play on YouTube where he collides with Jose Altuve.
Yeah.
And a lot of people thought, one, that Teoscar Hernandez's career is over, because when you first look at it, it looks like he just blows the hell out of his knee.
Mm-hmm.
And I've never asked him if that's in the back of your mind all the time, but when he was traded over here, I had someone who was with the Astros the year before, had left the organization, a scout, tell me, and I ran into him at a Jays game later that year, and I asked him what he thought about Teoscar, and I just remember him saying that collision stayed in his head for a long time, and he said there are guys where you'll see that'd be the case. So I don't know. So I've always kind of cut him a little bit of slack defensively for that reason, because it's a pretty god awful collision. But I mean, I'm with you. I look at him, Kevin. It looks like his pre pitch setup in center field is more comfortable.
Yeah,
than it is in right field.
For me, his strength is not reading a ball off a bat. Center field, he can make up with that because he has speed. He can outrun the baseball in center field.
Right.
In right and left, you have to read the ball off the bat a little bit better, because a lot of the time that ball is on a line drive and you see it later. You're seeing it closer to you before you actually read the baseball. I don't think that's his strength. I want him to just see it, run after it, catch it, throw it in, and then go hit a bunch. I think he can do that easier if he's playing center field. Again, I'm not in the dugout. I'm not behind closed doors. I don't know what the conversations are like, but I just think they would be a better team and a happier team, and you want your best offensive players, which is Randall Grichuk, which is Teoscar Hernandez. They're two of them. Why don't you flip-flop them? One's familiar playing right. One likes to play center better. It just makes a little bit more sense to do that. I think you get more out of them offensively.
590-590 is the text line. We are soliciting questions, comments, rants for Kevin Barker. We'll take a break, go back to the text line. Lots of questions, lots of text today. It's Baseball Central on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. All right, we'll have Blue Jays baseball, a doubleheader for you. Don't let it beat you. A doubleheader for you this afternoon. You know what it is? I went running this morning before I came on.
That's what it is?
It is. And I didn't get myself enough time between running and coming on the show, because I like to give myself a couple hours, and I didn't. So that's why I was screwing up the Dave Steve stuff.
Oh, okay.
Anyhow. The doubleheader, first pitch will go at 4 o'clock. Ross Stripling will be on the mound for the Blue Jays. They still have four games left.
Tanner Roark's pitching the first game.
Yeah, well, no, but not. All right, but
well, don't let it beat you.
No, I'm telling people that Ross Stripling will be starting one of the... If you let me finish...
Oh, okay.
Ross Stripling will be on the mound for the Blue Jays in the second game. You're such a knob sometimes. You really are.
Well, yeah.
All listen, right. Tell me what your spies are telling you about Ross Stripling. Shai Davidi's got a terrific piece on him. Folks, this is a guy with a degree in finance who controls about $15 million worth of investments.
Can he keep a fastball in the yard? That doesn't really mean anything.
Now, one of the things we know, in air quotes, coming over from L.A., and Stripling talked about this himself, there is a suggestion that he may have been tipping his pitches. He's got kind of a weird delivery. Tell us what you've heard about Ross Stripling and sort of what the Blue Jays' approach will be with him.
Yeah, well, that's one of the main things is when you give up 12 homers and 11 of them are off your heater, you know, the first thing you start thinking of, are you tipping it?
Kevin, he made an interesting point, too. You know, he said, the thing is, when I make a mistake with that fastball, it's a home run. It's
hammered.
Not a double. It's not a triple. It's hammered. It is a home run.
It is. That would tell you they're looking for it. It hasn't been good located. So they're working on that mechanically, trying to get it to go down and away. He can elevate it. He can go in to lefties and mix it around, but you will see more off-speed pitches. He's going to up his usage of his secondary pitches. That's 2020. It's like Clayton Kershaw throwing 60% more breaking balls. That's what you do now. You're trying to get swing and misses. You don't want to let guys put the ball in play. It's better chances of doing that in fastball counts to flip it more. He's going to flip it more. He's going to try and keep people from seeing when he's throwing the fastball. He's going to try and pitch ahead like everybody tries to do, and he's going to give him four quality. They're not trying to ask him to go six or seven. Give him four quality innings and turn it over to that thing they got in the bullpen.
Yeah. He is, look, as Shai Davidi points out, this guy has been effective. There's a reason he's not a rental. Unlike the other guys, he's not a rental.
Yep.
He has been an effective pitcher, and I mentioned this as well. He and I'm not saying this is why the Jays went out to get him, but it certainly doesn't hurt. He and Ryu are really close. Like when Ryu left the Dodgers, there is a podcast out there with Stripling talking about Ryu when he left the Dodgers and how emotional a lot of people in that Dodgers team were. I had a Dodgers fan pointed out to me very early after Ryu had signed, said, just listen to this podcast because it'll give you an idea what the guy's about.
It sounds like he's a great guy too. He's a great teammate, which is the Blue Jays thing now, that they want that first. And then it's about how you get people out, which is never a bad thing.
No. So this is again, Ross Stripling is a little bit more of a long-term proposition for the Toronto Blue Jays.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what to make of this. Somebody just said in the text line, tell your bosses you guys should be on from 4 to 6.
Mm.
I don't know what to make of that. DD, what is your, this is 590-590 is a text line. There's no explanation as to why we should be there. What is your evaluation of Charlie Montoyo as a manager?
Ooh.
I heard a Blue Jay reporter criticize him saying he bunts too much. I don't know about that.
What?
I think he's been excellent. I don't know who that was. I think he's been excellent in handling pitchers and involving everyone without overextending anyone. He instills confidence in the players. What do you think? He bunts too much.
From my
point of view, if you bunt once during the season, you've bunted too much.
That's not my point of view. He's bunted the two guys that aren't hitting their weight in the two catchers they got.
It depends when you do it. But my point is this. I don't know if anybody's criticized him for bunting too much.
They're talking about sitting people when they don't run the bases the right way. That's his question, right? He's not running the bases. You know that they're having conversations. They're relaying the message to think it through. Don't listen to your bench when they're telling you to run. When you come to a complete stop, like Vladimir Guerrero Jr. did last night. Remember, Vladdy, you're not a fast guy. You're in that lineup because you can hit and drive in runs. Speed is not your biggest asset. So when you stop your momentum, go back to your base. Don't go the other way.
No,
learn from your mistakes, Jeff.
I should be a freaking Rhodes Scholar then if that's the case. But I mean, we talked about this yesterday. I'm just not a, you know what? I'm not a fan. And I texted somebody last night about this, about what would you do, a former manager. I said, all right, just give me an idea. What would you do? And he said, you know, one of the things you guys have to remember is, you know, he said, baseball's asked a lot of guys this year. You know, these guys aren't, they're not doing road work. Don't get me wrong. Professional athletes have it pretty good when it comes to the pandemic. But his point was that, you know, first of all, benching guys doesn't necessarily work in baseball. Guys know when they've made a mistake. You watch Vladdy's reaction. Vladdy knew he made a mistake. Okay, benching him's not going to get him to change his mind. It's not going to get him to be more aware. But this guy's point was you got to be a little careful now because you're asking your players, especially the Jays, you're asking them to isolate. There's a lot of, I don't know how much work folks have done and how much people know about what is going on in Buffalo. And not everybody's staying in a hotel. I believe in Buffalo, players had to, after the first series, they kind of had to scramble and find some stuff. So there's a lot going on there with guys. And I think you have to be really careful. Like, you are asking a lot of these guys in the context of professional athletes. And I think you have to be a little careful when it comes to that, Kevin. I really do. Like, if I'm happy with the way all these young guys are keeping their noses clean during the pandemic and I haven't had any discipline issues in that area, then maybe I'm cutting them a bit of a break. I'm just saying that and this is from a manager who said, look at it as a human being. You know, look at it as a human being. And he just said, I don't know Charlie, but his point was, if it was me, it'd sure go through my head that I'm asking a lot of these guys. So maybe I'm not going to bench them. I just want to throw that out there.
Yeah, well, it helps their winning. Winning cures a lot of things. That helped last night. Stop doing the same stupid thing over and over again. How about that one time?
That would be good. Somebody on Twitter DM'd me and said that if it wasn't for that rule, the second base rule in extra innings, Derek Fisher would never get on base. I just had to get that in there. It's a great line. Barker, thanks for doing this. We'll talk to you Monday. Writer's Block is next on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.